Another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast, and this is a very special episode because we're going to be talking about all ranked football games, and that is because it is conference championship weekend. We have some massive prospect matchups to talk about this week. We have a huge rematch between Texas and Georgia. We have a huge battle in the Big Ten championship game against the best team in the nation, and the team that will probably be seen as the best team in the nation if they win that football game. So I can't do it alone. I'm with my co-host, Corey Kinnon, the fake Corey Kinnon on X. How are you doing today, brother?
I'm good. I just got a workout in. Just got my post-workout chicken and pesto and my protein shake in. So I'm rejuvenated. I'm alive. Those carbs have converted to some energy here for me to podcast about championship weekend.
Chicken pesto and a shake. The shake, I think, is what throws me off there. First of all,
I'm just trying to down like, some protein right now.
I was going to say, it sounds like a ton of protein, which is great. But the shake after the chicken and pesto sounds a little bit interesting to me. But I'm not going to yuck your yum. You're getting it in how you need to get it in, and that's really all that matters.
Yeah, it's got some nice little burrata cheese on it, some like balsamic glaze too. Really good stuff.
But I love it.
Let's talk about this. Friday games.
Ashton Jansen.
Yeah, Ashton Jansen versus UNLV. Last time out, rushed for only 129 yards on 33 carries, which was his worst game of the season. Which is really funny to say that out loud. That his worst game of the season is 129 yards, while carrying the ball at that volume. But he's going to get a rematch here. This was one of Boise State's closest games too, as well. So I'm excited. You did the math. Talk about that. This might be what we need to watch for more than anything else.
Yeah, they absolutely need to win this football game.
Oh, for sure.
Not just to get into the college football playoffs, obviously, but for Ashton Jansen to have a shot at the single season college football rushing record. I don't know how many games Barry Sanders did it in. I can almost guarantee it was not as many as this. But it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, having that record beside your name, in 50 years, nobody is going to know or nobody is going to care that you played 14 games instead of Barry's 12.
11.
11?
He did it in 11 games. Okay. Listen to this.
Barry Sanders wasn't human.
11 games, 2,628 yards rushing, 7.6 yards per carry, 37 touchdowns in 11 games. That's averaging over 3 touchdowns a game.
Barry Sanders was not human.
No.
I wish I was alive for that. Good God, 11 games?
Averaging 7.6 yards per carry throughout a full season with 3 touchdowns a game.
Okay, I was fully on board. I fully wanted him to get the record. Now I don't. That's outrageous. That's outrageous. In 11 games is insane. But yeah, that's all we really have to talk about for Friday is the Ash and JT show. Mm-hmm. We don't need to talk about service academies. What do we got for Tulane? Like Mario Williams.
Yeah, Darian Mensa, whoever's going to pay him a butt ton of money next year when he goes into the portal, but
yes,
draft eligible this year. But outside of that, yeah, Mario Williams. But even Mario Williams, the USC transfer, he's played a little bit better. Yeah, but he's got USC tape. Like there's drops all over the place. I haven't checked back in this year, but I would just assume he's not declaring. So
yeah,
pretty tough scene from Mario there. But again, good for him for bouncing back and getting back at it there. But Saturday, the Big 12 championship game. Again, there's the two Iowa State wide receivers probably headline the Big 12 championship game in Noel and Higgins. They both have Senior Bowl invites. They both have accepted their Senior Bowl invites. But outside of that, there's Dominic Orange, defensive tackle for Oregon or Iowa State as well. I don't know if he's going to come out or not this year, but he has some buzz. looking at Arizona State, their best player is a freshman, man, and I love that. But like this year, we don't got a lot to talk about Arizona State other than the story and Kenny Dillingham.
We have one guy, Cam Scatebo.
Oh, the right. Yeah, you love Scatebo.
I do. I don't know if I do, man.
Yeah.
He catches the football. I really like his feet. I think he's a really good player. Unranked guy too. Sacramento State transfer. And he's got some good size. He's listed at 5'10", 225. So he's moving that way at that size. He is somebody who can play at the NFL level, especially with his hands out of the backfield. But that game is very much not all that important. Those are two teams, and they were talking about it on, I believe it was on Get Up today. Like, we're talking about the 15th or 16th best team in the nation getting into the college football playoff because they are the Power Four conference championship winner. And that's it. Like, none of those teams, even though they both have two losses, would get in over any of the three loss SEC teams.
Nope.
And I don't think you could make the argument for it. But
no.
And I do believe you win the conference championship. You win your conference. You deserve to be in. That's all there is to it. But I do think that we need to have a discussion about the way that we do seeding for it.
Yeah.
Because even Boise State getting number four does not sit well with me.
No, not at all.
Even though their only loss of the year is to the best team in the nation by three, mm-hmm. you still look at that team, you look at the resume, and it's not very good. Not very good.
I think the playoff committee needs to kind of do it like the NFL does, but the NFL reseeds in the second round. Like, they reseed. And I like, what's the issue with doing that? Like, you don't have to commit to a bracket, like 12, like get to the second round, see the seeds that are left and reseed from there. Like, I don't see the issue with that either, but.
Yeah. Anyways, we can get to the big game. Well, one of the two big games, Georgia versus Texas, mm-hmm. the 4 p.m. game. I'm so excited for this. It was really the one game of the year where we saw Michael Williams be the Michael Williams that we thought we were going to see this year. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be able to replicate that in the biggest moment of his season as an underclassman, somebody who has freakish length and outrageous build? And when I watched him just absolutely stand up to Cam Williams and the right guard for Texas. I can't remember his name right now off the bat. But he absolutely stood up against a really solid double team from those two. That's when I was like, okay, this kid is a freak of nature. But I mean, we've had this conversation between you and I. There's not much to love about him as a pass rusher, technically. And in a class of guys who are 270 plus pounds with legitimate burst and bend, he doesn't play with almost any bend. Mm-mm. He might have it in him. His ankles might be flexible, but he is not comfortable bending along the arc. So you have that, and you have a package that on the interior, he doesn't bring much as a rusher either. And you're really just betting on the length, mm-hmm. the athleticism, right. the explosiveness, and the pure strength that he has in his frame. And that's what you're betting on. So he needs a big game, in my opinion.
Go for it. Yeah, we talked a little bit about this out there as well, but I watched three games this season from him, and I tracked it, like every single pass rush win that he had. It's like, that's on the inside track. That's on the inside track. That's on the inside track. Inside track, inside track. And then after those three games, I even went to YouTube, and I don't like doing this very often, but like if I'm just tracking like something like inside versus outside, and I pulled up some like Michael Williams highlights off of YouTube of like other games too. And it's like every highlight is him winning inside shoulder, like of him coming back inside or him winning from the inside. I counted one rep where he took the outside shoulder. And to me, that it works the college level when you're playing future accountants and future travel agents and future doctors, whatever. Yeah, working through the chest of professional NFL tackles is not going to work time and time again. You'll get them every once in a while, but like, that's not how you consistently win and how you get a second contract at the NFL level. So that really worries me about Micah Williams for sure.
Yep, absolutely. And then also his running mate, Jalen Walker, had a massive game last time as well. Somebody who we kind of both see as an off-ball linebacker who can bring you a little bit as a, you know, third down pass rusher or a blitzer, but don't really see him as a full-time edge, or at least I don't really see him as a full-time edge personally.
No, no, for sure. He's an off-ball backer, almost 100%. So, yeah, almost off-ball backer. And then that becomes a little tricky of like, well, how do you project this guy's coverage skills when he's not really asked to drop very often. And if he is, he's fine. Like you gotta talk about that a little bit too. But yeah, Jalen Walker is a really good player. People that I've talked to in the league have said he's got the best character report of any player in this draft class as well. Like when on these background checks, that Jalen Walker's got the best character report out of any player that they've run a report on so far. And so he's going to go really high. And I think one, it's because of that. I wouldn't call it quick twitch, but it's sudden twitch and explosiveness to trigger downhill. And again, I think his eyes are really good. Even when he does play on the second level, rarely, about 40% of the time, I should say, not rarely, 40% of the time. But his downhill trigger is phenomenal. His eyes are good, I think, when he's diagnosing. So yeah, he's an off ball backer for sure.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see how Sark kind of schemes up a little bit of help with that pass protection, because it was an issue in that last game. I think we're going to see a lot more Gunnar Helm kind of staying in, chipping, making sure that they get the help that they need on the edges there. And then the one kind of big thing, he's not draft eligible yet, but Wisner coming in and playing for playing a lot more snaps for them. And being very good has been a really good advancement for that offense as well since that game. So, or since that first matchup. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. On kind of on the other side of the ball, I'm really, really excited. I love Andrew Mukuba, and nobody talks about him anymore. Another guy that from that Clemson team that nobody talks about. He's still fantastic. I went and I watched him, and I think nobody's talking about him because he went from playing a not primarily slot role at Clemson, but a very large majority of his snaps were as a slot player. And you just are going to be more forward facing. You're going to get on camera a lot more playing from the slot. He is playing a deep safety role for Texas and playing a lot of single high in their predominantly cover three match defense. And man, he's still good, and he had a huge pick in that first game. I'm really interested to see what he does in this game as well, because of how often Carson Beck likes to attack the middle of the field. That's where he is kind of at his best. That's why we all loved him coming into this year as a quarterback prospect, because he had some of those high-end plays over the middle, and that is where Mukuba can be incredibly dangerous.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And he's got some apex defender capabilities to him, again, going back to his Clemson days, which is extremely valuable at the NFL level. And he'll get threatened vertically. Again, those receivers aren't very good, but the one thing they will do is they'll run in a straight line really fast. And same with the tight ends. They'll take the seam up on you. So that's a good one to look out for as well.
Yep. And then obviously the quarterbacks. We could talk about that all day.
Do we have to, though? Like, do we have to talk about Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck? I'm more interested to talk about Carson Beck because even that Georgia Tech game I thought was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good.
I thought he played pretty well.
There were a lot of drop passes. Even in one of the overtimes, he had Arian Smith in the back of the end zone and the second level receiver on a high low concept that the ball was to him and tried to reach up and grab it and tip the ball out of Arian Smith's way, which Arian Smith still probably should have got the football, which is the case a lot of the times in these games this season, but still probably should have got the football. He had probably three or four drops in this game alone, but yeah, I thought Carson Beck threw the ball pretty well against Georgia Tech. So you get a rematch against a big team. And even though Georgia won big against Texas last time, Carson Beck, I mean, was not good in that football game. So he gets a chance to kind of try to right that wrong here and see what we can do. Another one to take a look at is Alfred Collins was mocked in Dean Brugler's first round.
Yeah.
And he's going to go up against Tate Ratledge, Jared Wilson, Dylan Fairchild. So that's an interior matchup to keep an eye on as well.
Yep. 10-inch hands, 35 1/4-inch arms, 82 5/8-inch wingspan, and a 40-yard dash estimated of under 5 seconds for Alfred Collins. So yeah. The physical tools are definitely there. I have not watched him yet this year, but he's getting mocked in first rounds this late in the process. I have to get my eyes on him immediately.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. All right. Want to move on to Oregon Penn State here?
Yeah. Yep.
Oregon Penn State's another game with offensive tackle edge rusher battle.
The best
pass rusher in the class, Abdul Carter, against a guy in Josh Connerly who is getting top 50 love in this class. We have maybe towards the back end of my top 50, I might be okay with it because I think he does have some really good physical traits. His anchor, though, man, is going to get tested big time in this game. And that's been an ongoing issue for Josh Connerly.
Yes. So he ended up, I can't remember exactly where in my top 50, but is he in my top 50? He has to be. Trying to find him. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, he's 51. Or he is actually technically 50 because I have Travis Hunter in there twice. So he is technically 50. I thought that some of those issues have been mitigated a little bit more this year. I think that he's just played better this year overall. The physical traits are still there. I still do think that his issues are through his chest. But a dominant performance against Ohio State, against pass rushers or edge rushers they play predominantly with power. Like, that's what both of those guys, Jack Sawyer and JT, do. And he absolutely dominated JT when it came to the run game, blocking him as the end man online, opening up massive gaping holes in that B gap right, off of his ass. So I thought that he had a really good game then. I think that the physical tools as a pass protector are all there to be a starting blindside blocker at the NFL level. But he still does need to work on that core strength a little bit. However, what I will say is if he goes out and survives against Abdul Carter, it's going to say a lot about his potential draft stock because he is a guy with those athletic physical tools. A little bit like Josh Simmons in that respect with the lower half tools.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. His foot speed and his pass sets are phenomenal. His issues have always been his hands are so wide and he exposes his chest and the core strength. Yeah. A core that hasn't been very good. I do worry a little bit about, like, because he has a really good frame and he's at a really strong school with a really good program. Like, there's part of me that worries about, like, then how has he not filled out this frame in this program, at the school, ethic concern. Like, I'm not going to slander a guy. I don't know anything about his character, but, like, there are things like that that are like, why are we thin? Why are we still thin if you've been in Oregon for 3 years?
Yeah,
with this frame that is like offensive tackles would die for.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I don't know. That's something we're going to have to answer.
But we might see a lot of Abdul Carter on the other side because Ajani Cornelius, I would say, is rather reliable to.
He's a guy.
He'll be a day three swing tackle slash guard at the next level, in my opinion. Yep. So we might see Abdul Carter over there a little bit more to take advantage of that mismatch in this game as well. But we have a couple fun running backs. We got a couple fun-ish quarterbacks relative to the class that we can talk about in this game as well. We've got some wide receivers on Oregon's side.
Definitely not on Penn
State. Got a tight end on Penn State's side, though, to talk about, too. So Yeah, let's move there now. So let's talk about those running backs. Again, Jordan James has gathered some late hype. We'll see if that translates into him declaring for the NFL draft.
It'll be interesting because he's somebody I've been on him for a long time now. He's somebody who really popped out to me early in the season, just like, oh, this guy's got a little bit of burst. I think my favorite thing about him that you don't always see in guys is the ability to like make hard redirects. So not just like jump cuts, but legitimately like flip his hips and say, oh, I'm going to get outside now and you're not going to follow me. And that's what he is very, very good at. He's very, very good at kind of pressing on wide zone looks and then being able to still hit outside of the tackle. And so he's a guy who I like is a little bit of a slasher in his skill set. I don't really think he's a home run guy, even though he does have some really good explosiveness, but just a pretty decent player overall for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is a weird year where Penn State doesn't have a corner to talk about, which is should translate into good news for the likes of Evan Stewart and Tez Johnson as well.
I know
Kevin Winston had a lot of hype at the beginning of the season and he got hurt. We'll see if he comes out. You know, now the guys are getting paid at the college level. There's just like really no incentive unless you really want to, like, unless you're really highly touted or you're out of eligibility to like come out.
Yeah.
So I would assume he's probably going back to school as well. So it should be a pretty good day at the office for those Oregon receivers against that defense. Assuming protection holds up front.
Yeah. And that's going to be on both sides of the ball because we didn't even talk about Oregon's defensive front yet with Derek Harmon and Jamari Caldwell. And Caldwell's not really much of a pass rusher, but Derek Harmon sure is. And the way that they move their defensive linemen around, the way that they run games, especially Caldwell and Harmon together, that's a dangerous interior duo. And Penn State, the interior of their offensive line or their offensive line in general, most years is just not very good. It's not a position that they recruit very well normally. And so that will be interesting, along with the run defense from Oregon against Nick Singleton. And we can throw Catron Allen in there as well, but Catron doesn't have juice. So
no,
that's not really a...
he's on some Elijah Holyfield type stuff right now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, Drew Aller, a lot of people, I'm seeing more talk about him being legitimately like QB2 in this class. Yeah. And I think that just kind of goes to show what this class is because I don't think we've seen very much from Aller still. We're still just kind of waiting for it. And I don't think that, it's a lot of it is his issue. It's not like a Riley Leonard thing where he just refuses to throw the ball downfield. He just can't throw the ball downfield because nobody is open downfield on the outside. And he has the best tight end in college. Well, one of the best tight ends in college football. We think the best draft prospect as a tight end in college football. And a really good receiving back in Nick Singleton to help out and just kind of be a safety blanket for him. So it'll be interesting. It's a big resume game for him if he is going to declare, because this is a very good defense overall. It's got some veteran defensive backs who won't be day one picks, won't be day two picks, but are going to be day three picks for Oregon. And we're going to see another resume game for Tyler Warren. The end of the day, that's what this is.
This game will revolve around what Tyler Warren does for Penn State offensively. Just going back to Aller a little bit, I mean, he's at the benefit of having Andy Klemecki as his offensive coordinator, because I do think there's just so many shots that are just like layups that he has to hit, and he's hitting them. And so, like, again, Drew Aller deserves credit for passing the test of the test that's in front of him. What you were saying about the receiver talent, it's bad, man. It's bad. Like, their number two receiver is an Ohio State castoff who would probably be fifth or sixth on their depth chart this year. Like, that's just the reality that he lives in with the receivers that he's throwing to. But again, he's passing the test that's in front of him. And that's not to say that he can't make the NFL throws. We just haven't seen him. Like, they're not on this tape. He's got some nice layered throws along the boundary. He'll rip the hell out of it up the hatch as well. But I want to see him push the ball down the field, and he's done it from my charting 16 times this season.
Yep.
Like, that's just, I mean, we're talking about the other guys in this class who were in the 40s, the 50s of throwing the ball 25 plus yards down the field, and he's done it 16 times.
It's just not there.
It's not there. It's hard to hang your hat on. So, yeah. And again, in an era where guys are going, getting paid to play college football, like, I would be shocked, unless he's got some guarantee from some team that says, hey, man, we'll take you in the first round. He has no incentives to come out. So
no, no, but it's also a tough decision to stay and lose Tyler Warren and lose Nick Singleton and maybe not get anything in the portal.
That's also very valid. It's pretty valid.
Yeah. So it could always get worse, unfortunately, for Jarrell. And maybe he'll just hop in the portal and go somewhere else, because you can do that. But he went, I mean, he very much went to Penn State to play for James Franklin. So we'll see how it shakes out. James hasn't done him many favors when it comes to putting offensive weapons around him at the wide receiver position. But on the other side of the ball, Dylan Gabriel, definitely somebody throwing the ball down the field. And that's somebody throwing the ball down the field who doesn't have an NFL arm.
No.
But damn, is he good. Damn, is he a good player. Damn, if I wouldn't take him on my team and hope that he could turn into my long-term backup. Because he's somebody who throws with great anticipation. He's naturally accurate. He just, at the end of the day, is 5'11", 190 pounds, and doesn't have an NFL arm to throw the opposite hash unless he is very early with the throw. And he has to be very – and that's probably why he has become such a good quarterback for Oregon, why he's playing this well this year, is because he's finally kind of become a professional quarterback mentally. And it's just enough for his arm to get away with right now. It also helps that he's playing with a two wide receivers that run in the 4.3s. So he definitely has some help, but he's been the best.
Yeah, we talked about that in the last episode. Yeah,
he's been the best quarterback.
He's the best college quarterback in college football. He's not the best NFL draft prospect. He's not even a day two, like early day three. No. He might slip in the seventh round.
Yeah.
Somewhere back there, but like, he's the best quarterback in college football, and it's probably by a healthy margin, I would say as well.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe Shador Sanders at two, because at the end of the day, I think if you put Shador Sanders at Ohio State or Miami or one of these other schools, he's not throwing as many interceptions, he's not holding the ball as long, and he's but again, that's a total hypothetical.
Or he probably is holding the ball that long, but he's going to not be under pressure while holding the ball that
that's
long.
Also that's also fair. But yeah, he's been the best quarterback in college football this year. And again, like, Colt McCoy played in the NFL for a decade. Chase Daniel played in the NFL for a decade. Taylor Heineke won a playoff game for Washington. Like, these guys hang around. If you're a gamer and you grind your way through camp and you do the dirty work and you prove value in the locker room and in the quarterback room for the starter, like, you can make a career for this. I mean, again, Josh McCown had some freaking tools. I mean, that dude was an athlete, but he played, I mean, he was a bridge for 12 different freaking teams in his NFL career. So like, Ryan Fitzpatrick, kind of the same way. Those guys had higher end arms, obviously, but you can hang around for a decade and prove valuable to NFL teams. And I think that's very much in the card. I think Colt McCoy actually might be a pretty good comp for him. I think he's probably a little more athletic than Colt was, but same size, same arm, same kind of shotgun, like a silly putty arm. But
do we have anything else that we want to talk about from this game? I think we kind of touched on every position. Jordan Burch has been like in the NFL draft landscape now for what seems like 4 years. I don't know what to do with him personally. He's just no juice on the outside and doesn't really play with power that you would like to see from a 290 pound guy. So
he had a lot of production early on, and I know that that caused a lot of buzz. I haven't checked back in since he got hurt. He didn't play against Ohio State. He didn't play like a good chunk of the middle season, so I haven't really checked back in on him.
I didn't see much with him. I watched him for the top 100. And I didn't see much from him. So, especially in this class where there is so much size, it just doesn't make any sense. Last game, another 8 p.m. game, and a good one. Clemson 3-loss Clemson versus 1-loss SMU. There isn't like a ton of NFL draft stuff to talk about here. The wide receiver turned running back for SMU, and I can't think of his name right now.
Rashard Smith.
Yes, Rashard Smith is one to watch out for. Former 4-star guy. He's from Kilgore, Texas. Went to Texas originally. Played wide receiver and is now a running back for SMU. And I was told by somebody who works at SMU that he has completely transformed this football team this year. So somebody who I haven't watched in depth yet, but somebody who has apparently been an absolute dude for that SMU mm-hmm. team.
Rhett Lashley, dude, that guy's a freaking football coach as well. Yeah. He's got a good offensive mind. For the sake of not having to have any discourse about college football playoff brackets and why SMU got screwed out of not making the playoffs, because if they lost, I just hope they win this game so we don't have to deal with that. Yeah. But because only one ACC team is making the college football playoffs. So I hope they win this football game. And we talked a little bit about, this isn't NFL draft related, but we talked a lot about in our last episode about like wanting those old school blue blood programs to come back to life. And I really do think this offseason is going to be huge for SMU to decide, are we going to be a feeder system for SEC schools, or are we going to throw some money around and prove that we can hang out with the big boys? Because, I mean, in the era of the portal, like these, I saw a tweet today that said that, and I haven't confirmed or checked, and they said they use 24/7 rankings. Every single 5-star signed to either the Big Ten or the SEC. So, like, that's rough. For the landscape of college football. And so, like, is the ACC just going to become a feeder system for the Big Ten and for the SEC? Is the Big 12 going to become a feeder system for the Big Ten and the SEC? Like, and so I'm interested to see if SMU can pull their weight. Again, they're in a great recruiting pipeline. They have a ton of tradition in that program. They have everything at the table that you could want. Again, I don't know what about their boosters are like or what their NIL collectives are like, or how much money they can throw around, but they have everything at their disposal. To kind of, again, money is the big thing that I don't know about, and that's probably the main thing, but to maybe return to prominence a little bit here and this time around not get their program on the brink of being shut down. So.
Yes. Yeah. The brink of the death penalty there. It stinks that RJ Maryland is out for the year because he's a fun player. Fun player for them. On the other side of the ball, Phil Maffa for me is the guy to talk about.
That dude, he's a brick shit house.
That dude is
it's like Brandon Jacobs 2.0.
He's 6 foot 235, and he's fun because I do think that he has a little bit of juice. He's never going to be a home run hitter, but I do think he's got a little bit of that first and second level explosiveness. But what I really like about him is he's a dude that he'll get hit and he'll get hit hard, but he has that low end torque to just keep his legs going because he is so big and he is so powerful. He just keeps the legs going for another couple of yards. And it's not like the bowling ball type of contact balance that we're kind of used to seeing where you kind of like hit and bounce off of guys. It's like he hits a brick wall and then he pushes the brick wall a couple of more yards. He is an impressive physical runner most of the time. And then there are other times where you brought up Brandon Jacobs, who was 260. Times where he ran a little bit finesse when you weren't expecting it. And those moments happen with Maffa as well. But he, for me, is the player to watch, along with Blake Miller, just as a guy who has tackle traits in a class where not a lot of dudes have tackle traits. Although I don't really think that there is a ton to talk about when it comes to SMU from a pass rushing perspective outside of maybe Elijah Roberts. So, and that's a very big edge rusher again at 6'4", 290. So that's maybe a matchup to watch with Blake.
Yeah. There we have it.
Yeah.
That's conference championship weekend. We're going to enjoy Ohio and Miami of Ohio for the blood and guts of all of the MAC, and we'll enjoy Marshall and Louisiana for some Mike Green hype, and that's about it. But I think outside of that, we talked about every major matchup to watch out for in this conference championship weekend.
We did. We came in thinking it would be a quick episode. Silly us. It's never a quick episode with us.
but yeah, until next week. At this point, we'll break this down a little bit. We'll talk about Abdul Carter. We'll talk about Josh Connerly. We'll talk about Rashad Smith. We'll talk about all these guys. But for now, enjoy conference championship weekend. Have a beer with your friends. Have some wings. Take your shoes off. Kick your legs up. Unless you're at somebody else's house, don't do that.
But, yeah, I'm gonna be out and about, so I'm definitely not kicking my feet up and taking my shoes off at the bar.
I love it. All right. Well, until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast.